It's the Ray Appleton Podcast from KMJ and KMJNow.com.
So, no near-death experiences with any of you, huh? In a plane, in a car, in a boat? Nothing where you kind of had to take over? Just nothing? I'm happy to move on, but if to follow up on this amazing story about this guy landing this Cessna, and I've learned that this one of our clients is a trainer and flies these things. He just texted me and said, this is a big plane, apparently, this Cessna 208. Wow. I thought it was a little dinky thing, but apparently not. I don't know anything about little planes. Warbirds that we can talk all day, which, by the way, the annual get-together, June the 4th at Eagle Field, coming up, you know what that means. Warbirds. I probably will have all the information for that tomorrow. Hope to have it today, but it hasn't come through to Pike yet. But, yeah, go out and do that for the how many years we've been doing that? My God, I've been going out there since 92. When we all put together the 50th anniversary of the Doolittle Raid. Don't get me started on that either. I'll be talking for an hour. But it's incredible that this guy did what he did. And I thought if there were any experiences out there, you know, in a car, boat, plane, a ride at Disneyland or something where it got a little hairy and you had to do something, we could share some of those experiences. So allow me to cough and give the phone numbers, and then I will move on. And if you call, we'll dive into it. 490-5858, 800-776-5858. And the calls are coming in. Good. There are a couple of things here that are scary. Alcohol deaths increasing dramatically for younger adults. We talked about 2021 having the highest drug overdose, you know, the rates of any year in modern American history. Now the U.S. has the highest rate of gun-related deaths in more than 25 years. This is new CDC data. And, of course, this has been augmented by what happened in 2019, 2020 with the pandemic. So bad things are happening to Americans because of bad times. Bad times that were not controlled properly by some leaders in some cities, some governors in some states. You know, we can pass the buck all we want to pass it. But we can also point the finger at many of these left-leaning states reducing laws, heavy laws that took care of this criminal activity. California, I mean big time, very big time. But let's grab some calls for you where you had to jump into action. This is good stuff. I love doing segments like this. So, Kevin, you're first. You're on KMJ. Thanks for calling, Kevin. It's all yours.
So it's not life or death, but when I was a teenager, we're in Reno, Nevada with my parents, and my dad's driving. I'm in the passenger seat. There's a medium barrier that's coming up, and he's going to straddle it, wreck our car. I reach over and grab the steering wheel and yank it to the right, and the left tires go up and over it, and we get off of it, and he screams and cusses me out, "Don't you ever dare to grab my steering wheel ever again." I'm like, "Okay, Dad, what? I'll let you wreck the car next time."
Why was he heading for the median? What happened there?
I don't know. I think he was just dazed off, just daydreaming or something. It was like, "Oh, son of a gun."
I mean, but that could have killed you guys. If they could have, you know, bounced you into some oncoming traffic, that could have been very bad. He should have given you...
Oh, yeah.
He should have been a lot nicer to you is what I'm trying to say.
Oh, yeah, he was, but it was just mad at that time. It was like, "Okay, Dad."
Yeah, no problem.
We'll wreck the car. No problem.
Yeah, we'll all die. No sweat. Grandma will be mad, you know. All right, Kevin, thank you. Tim, it's all yours. Hi, welcome to KMJ.
Hey, Ray.
Hey.
So I'm taking pilot license. I'm taking pilot flight lessons, and the pilot, he has to go up once a month to stay certified. So once a month, I say, "Hey, I'll buy the fuel. You teach me to fly the plane." So we got a deal. And so I've been up three or four or five times, and we fly around for, you know, an hour or two till we, you know, use up most of the fuel. Well, that day we decided to go over to Morro Bay, circle the rock, come on back, and we're coming into Chandler, and the propeller stopped spinning.
Oh.
And I'm like, what? is that supposed to happen? And he goes, "Oh, shit." And he He tries to restart the airplane. We've run it out of fuel, but it's got a reserve, like a motorcycle. So he flips a switch or whatever he does and tries to get the reserve going and start the airplane. But we're coming into Chandler. We're over the sewer treatment plant out there at Jensen and Cornelia.
Right, right. Now, let me just caution you for a minute. We had to bleep you because of your language, but I think...
I'm sorry.
you're forgiven. But I think we got most of the story. Keep going.
So we're only at about 1,000 feet. We're 2 or 3 minutes away from Chandler, so we're still kind of low. But he's got to make the plane dive to keep up the speed. You can't make the plane do anything if you want if you don't have some wind coming over
right,
the wing.
Right.
So you got to make it do 70, 80 miles an hour. So we got to put it into a dive. Well, we've only got a few seconds to make a decision where we're going to put this thing. And I tell them, hey, land on Jensen. I mean, they'll move. Well, so he goes, no, let's get that field over there. Let's get this field. Well, the field happened to be Trump, back when Trump was going to build that golf course.
Oh, running horse. Yes.
About California and out there.
Yeah, yeah.
So we're heading for the golf course, but we're losing altitude fast. And here comes an almond orchard, and I'm like, oh no, we're gonna hit trees. Hitting trees in a Cessna, you're safer in your car than you are in a Cessna.
Yeah, especially almond. Really, you don't want to run into almond. No,
man. So we are gonna just barely miss this almond orchard, and we think we got it made. But at the edge of the almond orchard is a road, and along the road, here come the power lines. Oh, no. The power lines. I'm either going to get electrocuted or cut in half. I don't get too scared. I'm not one of those guys that get scared, really. This had me nervous. I had to turn my head. I couldn't watch as we tore down these power lines and snapped two telephone poles, and it tore the landing gear off the airplane, and we landed at Trump's golf course. Out there, it was just dirt. But we landed, got out of the airplane, and went, oh, that wasn't so bad. But the stretching of the cables, the PG&E lines, the stretching of the cables and tearing off the landing gear slowed us down like an arresting gear on an aircraft carrier.
That's amazing.
So, and we didn't have any tires to land on, so the plane just belly landed, and it didn't go very far, and we got out, nobody was hurt, and what a deal.
Well, I know that turf out there well. That's where I first met Trump, and we developed this relationship that still goes on to this day. So was that in the area that was all plowed up, or what
yes.
kind of, okay, because that was pretty soft and mushy, and that probably had something to do with helping you out a little bit.
It was a canal and a ponding basin.
Exactly.
There's a little store on the corner.
Right.
And anyway, I'm lucky to be alive, but we were able to laugh about it when it was all done.
What was it ever determined what was wrong with the plane that had stalled the engine?
We ran it out of fuel.
Oh.
And we didn't have enough time because it still had a little left in it. If you switch over to the reserve, it's got 20 gallons of reserve or something. So but we had so little time to. He had to start flying that airplane because
right.
we had to put it in a dive to keep
right.
up the speed.
Right.
We didn't have time to restart the engine. If the plane would have flown 30 more seconds, and we would have got over Chandler, there's no fields. We'd have had to pick whose house we wanted to land on. Because there's nothing open once you get real close to Chandler.
Just had to go to Morro Bay that day and circle around the rock and like Mr. Big Shot, didn't you?
it was a beautiful day. And beautiful. Got to get beautiful picture of the rock.
Until that happens, right. Thank you. What a story, man. What a story. Glad you're still with us. God, I'm even scared the hell out of me. Lee, hello there. You're on KMJ.
Hey, I don't know if I can follow that one, but... This doesn't really have to do with life and death, but in a sense it does. When I was 19, a friend and I did a small motorcycle tour, and we ended up in Sonoma visiting my older brother, and we went out to dinner at a pizza parlor, and we were working on our second pitcher of beer when all of a sudden there was a crash in the restaurant, and I, out of the corner of my eyes, I saw a pizza fly up in the air, and apparently... older gentleman, he was probably in his 70s, had a massive heart attack. So I had my CPR card, and so I asked if there was any nurse or doctor in the restaurant, and no one was there to help. So I dove into it and was able to stabilize, get his heart started again.
Oh,
apparently, it was his second heart attack, and was able to restart him, and at least he was alive when he went into the ambulance. But not really a life and death for me, but was the one thing I take away from that is how quickly you can sober up if you need to, you know, when that adrenaline kicks in and you're doing something, you know, because, you know, I was a little bit buzzed, and next thing I know, I was having to do CPR on a guy. So that's my story.
Well, that's one for the books. At least you help somebody out. That's a good one. Got time for one more? Let me take a break, and then we'll come back and grab everybody else. And just looking for stories where you had to jump into action, all right? Like this guy that landed the plane because the pilot went unconscious, and he just wanted to get home and see his pregnant wife. And he brought this Cessna down. If you know the story, it's been all over the news. Great landing, big plane, did it. No experience. It's amazing. This is KMJ. Your calls are coming up. Stay there. Keep them coming, too. I love this stuff.
The Ray Appleton Podcast.
It's free.
KMJNow.com.
Hot off of this recent story about this guy that landed a Cessna in Florida. Never had any experiences behind the wheel of a plane in his life. I'm asking you about your experiences where you maybe had to step in and do something in a plane, in a car, in a boat, in a whatever, you know, where it was up to you or whatever, you know, it would have been coitons. And we're getting some great stories here. 490-5858, phone number, number one. Number two, 800-776-5858. I love this kind of radio. Live, spontaneous, getting here, the human experience, which is something I just really love. Joseph, you are on the Appleton program. It's all yours.
Hi, Ray. First, I want to say that I didn't feel like I was being brave because I didn't think there was any risk to me. Mm-hmm. But about 5 years ago, I'm a licensed nurse, so by law, I'm required to stop at car accidents or anything like that.
Right.
I was on 145 Kerman, just south of Kerman, on my way to work in Coalinga. And there was a bad accident right in front of me. It just happened. And the vehicle on my left was on the side of the road. It was a full-size Dodge pickup. The front end was total. It did run into a water truck because there was farm work going on there. And I saw a little fire in the engine compartment of the truck. But I didn't think it was a big deal, and I didn't have a fire extinguisher, but I stopped, went to the passenger side of the truck, and there was a field worker trying to get a lady out of the truck, but he wasn't having any success. She was passed out. So I took over for him, asked him where's the driver. Well, he had walked to get to a phone at a house. So I got the lady to wake up. She had passed out from the airbag. So I undid her seatbelt. So I was worried about neck injuries. So I got, when she woke up, I asked her gently, I don't want to startle you, but you need to get out of the truck. Take my hand and I'll help you ease your way slowly, slowly. Don't make any sudden movements. Come down and get away from the truck.
Mm-hmm.
When we got about 20 feet away from the truck, the entire gas tank exploded and a huge ball of fire. And if she had been in the truck, she would have been dead, and maybe I would have burned my hands. I don't know. But like I said, I didn't think that was going to happen. It just, what the world? It exploded in a ball of fire. And a couple of years after that happened, I ran into another nurse from the prison I worked at. And I brought that up to her in conversation. She said, yeah, why didn't you leave them your name? They just called you the Good Samaritan. I go, I was in a hurry to get to work, and she was fine. The ambulance was there.
You're lucky.
That's what happened.
That could have been really ugly, but bully for you. Thanks, man. Yeah, I mean, I guess that law is something that I don't want to say I marvel at, but I'm so glad it's there that if indeed you're a nurse, and I'm sure it's correct, I've heard this before, that You have to stop if you see something like that. And that's a good thing. Tom, you're on the air. What's going on? What did you do?
Good afternoon, Ray. 2006, I was bringing a sailboat back from Hawaii. It had participated in the Transpac, which is a biannual race from San Francisco to Honolulu. And I've brought boats back before. Typically, the race teams don't want to be bothered with bringing it back. It's not as fun. So this was a 40-footer. We were 400 miles north of Kauai and noticed some pilot whales on our starboard side.
Oh, wow.
And there were some calves in the bunch as well. And we were very early in the morning just marveling at these things. And then somebody noticed one of the calves was on the port side. And so we were looking at that, and then all of a sudden, bam, we got hit by one of the whales. Probably thought we were a predator because from underneath, the boat looks kind of like an orca. And so we assumed it was the mama whale. Struck us about 4 inches below the waterline, popped an 18-inch hole in just ahead of the keel. And we had water coming in like a fire hydrant. So we got on the radio. We were beyond radio range. We had a rented satellite phone. Somebody got on the satellite phone, called for help, and which was good. Then we needed to go inside, back into the hull to get the life raft out. So I jumped in and got that out. The interesting thing is the bottom of the boat in cross section is like a wine glass. And there are bulkheads everywhere, about 18 inches square, which each one has a piece of wood with a hole in it so you can open it up to inspect the hull.
Sure.
And these things were all now floating. And we probably had within 5 minutes, 24 inches of water in the bottom. So I'm going down, pulling out stuff, provisions, our ditch bags, and these things are floating. So you're walking, putting your feet in the holes where the bulkheads are and falling over quite frequently because you can't see them. And finally, for safety, we thought, let's give that up, because we were all trying to do that and get hurt. Then we realized we really need some of this stuff. By then, the water was 75%. So when I got in, it was about to my shoulders. And I volunteered to do that because, believe it or not, I was the youngest aboard and a pretty strong swimmer, but I'm claustrophobic.
Mm.
And when I put my head under the water, I thought, it was going through my head, there's not much air in between, there's maybe 2 feet of air and 6 feet of water.
Sure.
And at some point, this thing is going to start, it was, the top of it was at water level, and pretty soon it was just going to go down like an anchor. And I was terrified. So anyway, I was swimming around and I got everybody's ditch bag and got as many provisions as I could. We had MREs and a couple of jugs of water and got out. The raft was already inflated, so I swam over to that and handed everybody their stuff and climbed in. And as it turned out, some air got trapped in the hull.
Yeah.
And it was floating with less than a foot of the top of the deck out of water, and the mast was sticking up. And it stayed that way until night when we couldn't see it anymore.
This is a great story, but I got to get you to the end. I got about 45 seconds to news. Oh, but go ahead.
So the end was Coast Guard flew out on a C-130. they dropped a canister which had a radio in it, which we communicated with them, and they said we were beyond helicopter range. So they were redirecting a tanker ship to come pick us up and take us to Japan. And the crash happened about 9 o'clock in the morning, and we got picked up by the tanker ship about 11 o'clock that night.
Whoa. When's the movie coming out? That's huge. Wow. Write a book, my friend. Great story. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'll let you go because I'm out of time, but that's a biggie. I'm out of breath. More of your calls coming up on Close Calls. I love it. 490-5858, 800-776-5858. I almost topped the guy that landed the plane with that last one.
The Ray Appleton Podcast, right now.
Free.
KMJNow.com.
You know, I'm glad we hooked up on this because this is good stuff. Listening to the human experience live on the radio, based off of the story of the guy landing the Cessna in Florida. Getting back to the phones, and I appreciate everybody's patience. Joey, talk to me. You're on KMJ. Hi.
Hi, Ray. This is Joey. I had a little airplane story. I'm sure it's not quite as good as the guy in the news, but
I'm ready for it.
Years ago, Pardon?
I said I'm ready for it. Lay it on me.
Oh, okay. Many years ago, early 70s, I was learning to fly, and I was flying out of Fresno Air Terminal, small set in Cessnas. And you get to a point after 15 hours or so, where you have to do these single, by yourself, long leg charted courses. And I got started kind of late, and I had to fly, I think it was 3 100-mile legs. I flew down to Bakersfield, over to Kalinga, and then back to Fresno.
Mm-hmm.
And I fiddled around, and got late. Well, I left Kalinga, and I was low on fuel. And I said, well, I'm going to do what they tell you not to do. I'll make it, you know, back to Fresno. And so I started flying, and about 15, 20 minutes, I started thinking, I better get some fuel. So I turned around, and I was flying back to Kalinga. If you've ever been there, it's a little strip in the mountains there. And at this time, the sun was going down in the west, and it was right in my eyes. I could hardly see.
Oh, boy.
And all I had was like $2 or $3 on me. So I ended up buying some gas back when gas was 30 cents a gallon. And then I started out. The problem was that it was so late now, it was starting to get dark. I had never flown at dark. I was by myself. And I couldn't find the lights to turn on the gauges. And it was getting darker and darker.
Oh, this
finally
is good.
I found a little, I think it was it's been a long time. It was either a little flashlight or a lighter. And I was able to get on the radio and contact Lemoore Naval Air Station. And I told them, I was starting to panic a little bit. And I told them that who I was a new pilot. I was had not been trained. I got caught. I'm flying. And this guy took over. And he started asking me questions just to see if I was mentally stable, you know. What do you see out there, Joe? What do you see over here? How's this going? How's your family? You know, that type of stuff. Comfort me down. And he started talking to me. And he says, I want you to fly to the left, turn to the left so many degrees. Then I want you to turn to the right. Then I want you to do this. And what he was doing, he was picking me up on radar. And so he says, you know, Joe, we got you. And you're doing great, you know. And what we're going to do is you do exactly what we tell you, and we're going to hand you off to Fresno Air Terminal when you're within range. Right now, you're over the Lemoore Naval Air Station. And so to make a long story short, they had calmed me down and made me feel like everything was going to be good.
Mm-hmm.
And they handed me over to Fresno Air Terminal, and they picked it up. And apparently they knew exactly who they were getting. And they pretty much closed off the, made sure there was no other aircraft in the air they brought me out towards Sanger, and they brought me on approach, the flashing lights.
Yeah, yeah.
And they lined me up on that baby and brought me right in and put me down on that 2 mile, the long runway.
So but you made
that
it.
That might not be too exciting to some people, but for me, I was really impressed.
Well, I mean, not having ever done it nighttime before, though, not being certified or cleared or whatever the word is on that, I mean, that's a remarkable story, my friend. Congratulations. Thanks for sharing that. It's making me nervous. Let's see. Who's, hold on. Okay. Ellie. Couldn't make out the name there for a moment. You're on KMJ. Hi. Ellie, are you there? Hello? Goodbye. Thanks for trying. Bruce, welcome to KMJ. What's going on?
Hi, Ray. I've had a couple incidents with an aircraft. First one was an engine failure, flying with someone who had been their first time up in a plane.
Mm-hmm.
Not much of an event. We set up for landing. I shut the engine off to kill the noise because it wasn't doing anything anyway. And talked to him on the way down to keep him calm. And set up for a landing in a grade school on a Saturday. Everything worked out eventually. You get closer, you start seeing things like soccer nets and terrace levels, but you make adjustments for that. And we touched down on the top level, coasted off to the second level and off to the third level, and came to a stop. Had to walk out of the school to call, go to a house to call someone. No one even knew we were there.
Yeah, wow.
And the guy was fine with that. He came back and took lessons.
Oh, really? Heavy duty trust, huh?
Yeah. The second event was an in-flight fire where I was checking someone out to fly the fly school plane.
Yeah.
And he's doing the flying, showing me what he knows, and the cockpit started filling with smoke, and you can smell it. And immediately he and this friend in the back seat panicked. And he takes his hands off the controls and says, quick, get us on the ground. So I could tell by the smoke it was an electrical fire, so I told him, turn off the master switch under your seat, the master power switch.
Sure.
He didn't hear me. He's still in panic mode. And I tap him firmly on the shoulder. I point down. I said, turn off the master switch. So he did that. And we opened the door and vented the smoke out and flew back to the airport. As we got come back to land, he picks up the radio and starts to make a call to tell people we're landing. And I remind them that there's no power. He said, oh, yeah. And he reached under his seat and turned on the master switch again.
Huh.
And, of course, the smoke started again. But we were so close to landing, it didn't matter at that point.
That's amazing. Thank heaven. I mean, you were along for the ride to tell him what to do. Otherwise, you would have been toast, all of you.
Yeah. Yeah, electrical fires are fairly simple to deal with. They just cut the power.
Gotcha. Thanks, man. Got to cut you loose. You enjoying this? It's a little different, right? We'll take a breather. Final break. Skip and Phillip coming up shortly, but still time for more of your calls about close calls, times when you had to step in and take care of business, etc. 490-5858, 800-776-5858. We will be right back.
Right now.
The Valley's legendary Ray Appleton.
The Ray Appleton Podcast. KMJNow.com.
Got to wrap this up shortly. So you got to keep your stories a little short, but I don't want you leaving out pertinent details because this is good stuff. This is fun radio. Ellie is back. Let's see if we can connect this time. Hi there. You're on.
Hi, I'm on. Yes, in 1960, I was involved in a car accident with my sister, her 5-year-old son, and my 19-month-old son. Our car was hit, and we ended up in the bottom on the wheels of the canal on McKinley between Sierra Vista and Cedar.
Yeah.
My sister was thrown clear, but my nephew and my son and I were thrown to the back seat, and we're in 7 feet of water, ice cold water, snow melt, of course. Immediately, the bank filled with people lined up looking down. Well, I've got these two little boys in the back, and we're looking out the back window. I'm holding their little heads up above water. I knew I couldn't break the window, but I let go of my nephew, and I banged on the window. He went under. He came back up, said, what happened, Auntie? Well, I grabbed him again, and a lot of it is I don't really know how I did it, but somehow I got my son out, but I lost my grip. The current ripped him out of my hand. So I left my nephew, and I went out after him. I couldn't find my boy, but I made it to the bank, and people were lined up looking down at me, and I'm hanging on to the weeds, and I said, "Will someone please help me?" Well, here comes this man running down the bank. He's in his skivvies, and as cold as it was, he came down and pulled me out of the water. And to make a long story short, or anyway, he just died. His name was Leland Siebert. And hearing the memories of people at his service, he was a wonderful man. He wow. did so many good things for people. He's an angel in heaven. Now, but anyway, that
now,
was...
Explain one thing. I lost track a little bit. What happened to the two boys, your nephew and your son?
Well, okay, my boy was ripped from my arm by the current, and of course I'm looking all over for him. I saw a back door of a car open, a lady sitting there with this baby wrapped up in a blanket.
Okay. So you're,
so he was safe, and my nephew was still trapped in the car. He and another, the Leland Siebert and another man were doing their best to get him out, but every time they'd get the door open, the current would take it down again.
Oh.
And they'd get a hold of him, but then they couldn't. So finally Leland said, "Well, I don't care if I break his leg, I'm going to pull him out." And he did pull him out without any injury.
Oh, that's great. So they are.
Just want to compliment our hero. I just want to say compliment our hero, Leland Siebert.
Well, we'll all bless him, Leland Siebert. That's great. It sounds like a man's man. Thank you, Ellie. Great story. I'm glad you finally got through. Chad, go ahead. Hi.
Hi, Ray. Boy, tough to follow that one. What a great story she just shared there. I'm calling because of a proud dad moment. I was down in Florida and was diagnosed with COVID in July of 20, and I get a panic call from my next-door neighbor at 4 a.m. Fresno time, and he tells me he just revived my wife. Well, come to find out, my daughter heard my wife fall out of bed, got her grandmother up who was staying with us, called 911, and had the presence of mind to go to my neighbor, who's my hero, because he's a pharmacist, and he came over and started CPR and saved my wife. But if my daughter hadn't had the presence of mind at 15 years old to take those three steps, we wouldn't have my wife today.
Wow. How long ago was this?
July of 2020. Just 2 years ago.
Yeah, I was going to say, this. The way you're reacting sounds like it's kind of recent.
Yeah, it's, you know, and here I was stuck in Florida. I couldn't even come home and hug my daughter or even go to the hospital to see my wife. It was, pretty traumatic experience. But like I said, just so honored and thankful to have those heroes in our lives and the steps that my 15-year-old daughter took to have that presence of mind at that young age.
Amen for that, Chad. Thank you, brother. One more, maybe two if we get lucky. Mike, you're on the air. Hi.
Yeah, Ray, I refused to fly. This happened to me a few years ago. We were in Utah for a layover, and I smelled something burning. I was on one of those double-deckers. We were taxiing for takeoff, and I talked to the guy next to me. He says, "I'm an A&P mechanic. Do you smell that?" He says, "That's a hydraulic switch underneath us." I said, "Did you tell anybody? We're taking off, man." And he goes, "No." And he was just so nervous. And I called the stewardess over. I said, "There's something burning here." He says, "It's a switch." She goes, "I'm going to stop the flight." Well, we're on the ground for 4 hours. They wouldn't let us out of the plane. And he says, "Oh, it was just a minor switch." But to top it off, Ray, on my trip back, the radar went off on our jet, and they had to bring us back into Nashville on the same trip, and I refused to fly since. I go Greyhound, Ray.
I tell you, man, you'll be like three strikes and you're out with your record there. Thank you, bro. That's scary. I love to fly, and I was, you know, involved in that hairy one back in 92 when we were doing the 50th Doolittle, and my plane went down just outside of Santa Barbara, and we were almost toast, and we don't need to relive that again, but sometimes when that happens, you just got to get around and get back in, get back up on the horse, you know, which I've done that a few times. If you've seen me pitch it out of the Civil War Revisited when I was doing that a couple of times with horses that weren't too cooperative. But, I mean, this is stories like this really show the human character. Especially that story about that Leland guy, that was Siebert, who just passed away, according to Ellie. That was a great story, and a happy one at that. The way that she told it the first time, both Michael and I were looking at each other. The kids died. Both of the kids didn't make it. No, thank God they did. So, thank you. That was a good one for me. You entertained me with that one rather than me trying to entertain you. And once in a while, we have to reverse that because I don't know how entertaining I am anymore. You know, I've been doing this so long, but I thank you for that. All off of that great story of the guy in his Cessna who, you know, brought it down just because he was urgently going to see his pregnant wife after having been in the Bahamas and he was in Florida. They were in Florida. What was he doing? I'm assuming he was probably on business. You know, I mean, the pregnant wife at home. I mean, but I don't know if there's a lot of karma there. Because if there was, if he was doing something he shouldn't have been done, he probably wouldn't have landed that plane as successfully as he did. All right, tomorrow at noon, I'm going to remind you again, you're going to meet a cop named Brian Williams. And he's a heavyweight boxer. And there's an event at the Tower Theater on Saturday that is going to be a hoot. And this guy is going to be fighting his last heavyweight fight at age 51 Saturday night. And from what I've heard about this man and his boxing, his fighting acumen, and this is going to be a bunch of law enforcement officers all mixing it up. I'm still not real up to speed on what the event's all about yet, but we're going to find out tomorrow, and then we're going to pack the place on Saturday night because I'm sure as hell going. If I can watch cops beat the hell out of cops, I'm in. But I like fights anyway, and I say that with a smile on my face and a very positive attitude because I love our law enforcement people. And if you've listened to the show for more than 5 minutes, you know that. Gotta go. Skip and Phillip. On the way, Michael Germanuel Jr. Me, I'm Ray Appleton. And guess what? You're still not.
It's the Ray Appleton Podcast from KMJ and KMJNow.com.
Mike Carruthers shares little pieces of intel and interviews you can use to improve your life on the Something You Should Know podcast.
The next time you're looking for a job and have to write a cover letter, here's some advice from Skip Freeman, author of a book called Headhunter's Hiring Secrets. Add a P.S. to the bottom of that cover letter. That can actually increase the chances of that letter being read by up to 75%. Some people actually glance down and read the P.S. first.
Something You Should Know. Search on YouTube or wherever you listen.